scores! Gilmore scores! The ball three left!
Off the glass, it left corner to Aguila. Aguila to the left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by Aguila. Rebound, another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg.
All right, let's get things going on this hour of Flames Talk. It is Friday, March 21st. It's Pat Steinberg along with you on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. And we welcome you to the Sports Drive brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Did you know that barrier-free access doors are required for commercial entrances and public washrooms? Are you compliant? Visit Calgary Lock and Safe. .com. And it's a Friday, which means this hour is the Eric Francis Hour on Flames Talk, as we say hello to Eric Francis from Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca. He's in Manhattan as the Flames continue their four-game road trip. Three down, one to go, and that is Saturday afternoon against the New York Islanders, but still everybody buzzing, I think, about that win Thursday night in New Jersey. And Eric, I mean, just a win that nobody saw coming. And I don't even say that in a derogatory way, but, you know, you had a Flames team that has struggled to score all year, the 32nd-ranked offensive team in the NHL, a team that has struggled mightily on the road this year, and they're down 3-1 in another team's building after 40 minutes of play, and yet there they are. They come out with an outstanding third period. They came out with a purpose, and it was just something nobody had on their radar. I know I definitely didn't see it coming, didn't have it on my bingo card, and yet that ends up being the biggest period of the season, hey?
Did not see that coming. As you said, nobody did. It was interesting to talk to the players after the game, like, and I don't know if I even believe them, because it was kind of a state of euphoria in that room afterwards, understandably so. But they all spoke about the fact that they really believed that they could come back in the third. And I don't know. Like, I don't know how you could have that belief when you're the lowest scoring team in the league and things really weren't going your way in the game. It's not like you were dominating the game to that point, but they sure did in the third period. And as the coach said, it started with the first shift. Kadri and the kids had a really good shift, really took it to the hosts. And then from there, they just continued to roll line after line out, and they kept, keeping it deep and pinning the Devils in their zone. It was impressive. But even then, I still did not see it coming. Just fantastic. Like, hey, if you're the Colorado Avalanche, you can see something like that happening on any given night. But when you're the Calgary Flames and we know their struggles offensively, I just didn't see it. And it comes with the backdrop that I think so many people around the league are still looking at this team going, wow, this is probably where it ends. This is probably where they start to fall out of the race. Hey, good year. You had a good season, but none of us really thought it was going to continue on. But to their credit, they're not thinking the same way. They're still in this thing, and it is impressive.
We were talking about this earlier this week. I mean, they're a team that doesn't pull away on you. Like, if you take a look at in-game or just this season, like, if you take a look at the way the season's gone, they have not really been able to pull away from the pack at the bottom of this playoff race, but nor have other teams pulled away on them, because it feels like every time on the negative side of things, every time they are in a situation where they can maybe bury a team or get some separation, like that game last week against Vancouver or those two games in St. Louis, they're not able to do it. And yet, as you said, on the other side, the positive side, every time you think this group is dead and buried, they find a way to throw their hand up through the dirt and they're right back in it. And last night, Thursday night in New Jersey, was a perfect example. I mean, 3-1 after 40, and they're what, 3 and 4 points back of a playoff spot if they don't find a way to win that game, because Vancouver and St. Louis go to extra time. They would have been 4 back of the Blues and 3 back of the Canucks, and now all of a sudden they're 1 and 2 back. I mean, that's a borderline season saving night.
Oh, God. Exactly. And, I think everybody in Flames land probably just assumed it was going to be a three-point game when the other two teams met last night in the Vancouver game. And that, of course, happened. I think in my mind, I'm still, yeah, they got a quarter of the season to go. It's starting to get a little – no, they don't have a quarter of the season. They have 14 games left. Like, now it's to the point where you start to do some math, and I'm sure you've hashed this out over this last week. Like, how many of the 14 games can they afford to lose? Like, you know, St. Louis is on a pretty good roll right now. Vancouver, lesser so, but they still are in between them and his playoff spot. Like, do you have to win 10 of your 14 moving forward? I mean, I don't know if that's the number you're coming up with, but it sure seems like the sort of number they have to be realistically looking at. And then you look at the schedule moving ahead and you go, well, I'm not sure that's actually possible at all. But either way, one game at a time, one period at a time, and that's what they did last night. And I find it shocking. What's the number you come up with? 9 out of 14 gets them in?
I think that would get them in. I think 8 of 14 might as well. Like, I think 91 points might get you in. If you take a look at now St. Louis is rolling, so they're kind of the X factor in this, but everybody's at about a 550. If we pick Utah out of this equation because they're four back, and that was a big win against the Oilers for them to keep themselves in this thing, but they're four back. They do have the game in hand on the Blues, but let's say it's about a 550 points percentage everybody's been going at for the most part this season. And 550 times 164 is about 90 points. So, you know, right now on current points percentage, 91 probably gets you in. Flames have 75, so that's 16 points. So that would be getting somehow 16 points, 8 wins, or the equivalent of when you throw in overtime and shootout losses between now and the end of the regular season, which I think is doable. Yeah. But, you know, it's not. I mean, they've been a 500 team, Eric, for basically the entire stretch of 2025. I think they're a game above 500 now in the calendar year of 2025. And since their 5-0-1 start, they're two games above 500. So, I mean, this is a team that absolutely has been a 500 group for a little too long. But if they can go somewhere in the 16 to 18 points between now and the end of the regular season with 28 on the table, then I think that gets them in. Unless St. Louis keeps up their torrid pace, then it's got to be more. Or if Vancouver suddenly gets on a heater, but I don't know if there's anything that points to that happening, knowing how this season has gone for the Canucks so far, especially the second half of the season.
Yeah, you know, so you look at the big picture and you say, you know, the optimist would say that, you know, what they've done over the last two games with comebacks and some pretty tough buildings against, you know, some teams kind of in a similar situation as they are, like right in and around the cut line for the playoffs. That bodes well for a team moving forward. That, you know, I kept asking the question last night to all the players and the coach, like, what does this do for your confidence? And it's probably the wrong way to word the question because it's not really about confidence at this point in time. It's about, I guess it's about confidence, belief, mojo, momentum, whatever you want to call it. They've got it over the last couple of days. Like, it's got to do a lot to put a bounce in their step. And, like, I can tell you that dressing room after that game at Madison Square Garden, I'm down there sometimes when the guys get off the ice, and I don't recall them being as pumped as they were after that game the other day. And then to follow it up with a much more dramatic win in Jersey, the guys they're jacked up right now. So you wonder what that could do for a team at a time when they really need to go on a roll. And, you know, the other good news for the optimist is that Dustin Wolf is like, there's no sign of him slowing down. Like, you know, I thought he was fantastic last night in the first and second periods. And then even in the third, he only had, I think, four shots, but one of them was a breakaway that would have iced the game. And Mercer put a pretty good move on him too. And he still manages to kick it out. So he's unflappable. I'm not counting the Toronto game because I still think, I defy you to show me more than just the one goal along the ice where he could have maybe, like, he's managed to come up with some of those saves. But, like, mere mortals don't generally make saves on all the, they're all one-timers. Three of them were on the power play. Like, the Leafs were due for a breakout. Like, there were a lot of things going against them. I don't even count that as a failed outing. Obviously, the score was, but that wasn't on him, as the coach said. So, yeah, you got your goalie going. Everyone in the room is feeling like $1 million. You know, you move forward. Now, the pessimist would say, yeah, but the schedule. The schedule is tough for these Calgary Flames, especially compared to St. Louis. And that's where I think a lot of people are still real hesitant to buy in 100% and say, I think they can do this. Because this schedule is very, very tough for the Calgary Flames. Two home games against Vegas. There's still a Dallas game in there. Isn't there a Utah-Colorado road trip?
Yep.
Back-to-back. Like, it's pretty tough for these guys. But, hey, enjoy the ride, because while it's going right now, it's a fun one.
Well, and when you talk about the whole idea of, hey, I mean, this team was done. I mean, I think a lot of Flames fans, and not everybody, but I think a lot of people looked at that loss in Toronto and said, geez, Backlund's not back anytime soon, and this is Dustin Wolf didn't have the greatest night. Although I'm completely with you, I didn't think that that was I didn't think that was a night that you couldn't rest on the goalie's shoulders in any way, shape, or form. But you're like, okay, geez, that's a Wolf had lost 3-4 in a row, and they'd lost 3 in a row. They coughed up that game against Vancouver, and then going up against two really good teams again, Colorado, Toronto, they lose both of those, and then they bounce back the way they did against the Rangers, and you know, they were supposed to be the tired team that night. They were supposed to be the group that didn't have it, and the Rangers should have been just as desperate as the Flames were, but obviously weren't that night, and then they do what they did two nights later against the Devils. It continues to speak. I mean, we've been talking since game one of the regular season about, hey, these guys believe, and these guys don't have any illusions of quitting or waving white flags or living up to what some on the outside were thinking about them. And here we are now 68 games into the season. And yeah, there's been some dips and there's been some rough stretches and there's been some really rough nights. And there's been some reason for pessimism throughout this more than three quarters of the season. And yet here we are 14 games to go. And that same attitude and that same belief and that same identity that we saw that night to open the season in Vancouver, like, it's still exists here as we're getting towards the end of March.
Yeah, it's remarkable. And, you know, it's one thing to pay lip service to the fact that we believe. It's another thing to show that you actually believe and to act on it and prove to people that you believe. And that's what they've been doing. Look, you kick off a road trip like this with a pretty demoralizing loss in Toronto and you wonder how they're going to respond. And they've responded better than anyone could have expected. So yeah, if they do complete this and make the playoffs, boy, that's quite a storybook run. I mean, I think that this would be a bigger, well, you know, we could have a pretty good debate, I'm sure, over whether this is a bigger shocker or the year under Bob Harley, where they made the playoffs out of nowhere and no one expected it. You know, what's the bigger shocker? I don't know, but you did it back then with some pretty young, talented players that we found out later were just absolute studs in Monahan and Gaudreau and such. Here, you're doing it with no goal scoring. You're doing it with a goaltender. So it's fascinating to me.
It is really, like, I know there's a lot of people who want to compare the two, but, I mean, you're right. So different from one to the other. Like, this is on the back of a goaltender. And I don't want to take away credit from the other people that have been involved. I mean, Jonathan Huberdeau's having his best season as a member of the Flames. Kadri's been great. Uyghur's been incredible. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about Kevin Ball and the input, the impact he's had in just a little while here this hour on the program. But, I mean, Dustin Wolf has, you take a look at some of the metrics around the league, like, there, you could make the argument that Dustin Wolf has been good for, on his own over the course of the season, anywhere between 8 and 10 points in the standings just on his own, and they're without question out of the playoffs and getting a top 10 pick if they don't have Dustin Wolf playing at the level he has this year. That's been the story of this year, the story of that season 10 years ago was, yeah, you had Johnny Gaudreau as a Calder Trophy guy and his incredible rookie season and the chemistry with him and Monahan and Jiří Hudler and the fact that they were able to just keep on pulling off these incredible comebacks. And, you know, they would win games that they weren't supposed to by like 5-4 scores. Whereas, you know, that game against the Rangers on Tuesday night, that's maybe more what this team is. As fun as Thursday was, I don't know if we're seeing another night like that where they explode for 4 goals in a period to come back on a team, whereas that game against the Rangers where they were really structured and they found a way to score the 2 in the first period but then struggled to score the rest of the way but also didn't give up a whole lot to the opposition, like that is more the story of the season, finding ways to win really low-scoring games. So I don't know which one is more surprising, Eric. I really don't, because I think I had lower expectations for that team 10 years ago than maybe I did this year. But it would be pretty close, all things considered. And so they're probably right on par, and yet the way that they're getting to both situations, or the way they got there 10 years ago and the way they've gotten here this year, very, very different, hey?
Yeah, it's so different. And, you know, in hindsight, you know, if we had known that Johnny Gaudreau was going to be a superstar, then we might not have been as surprised that team did that back then. But there were still so many questions because he was so small. No one knew if he could have that sort of impact. Well, guess what? We got similar questions about the star of this team. Everyone wondered if he was too small and he could get the job done, you know, translate that junior success into NHL success. And, you know, he's done it, kind of like Johnny in that way. So that's an interesting comparison too. It's, you know, it is amazing to talk to Wolf. I sat down with him after that Toronto game. He went over to Madison Square Garden, just him and LaBarbera, the goalie coach, and they just skated for 20 minutes. And it was really fascinating to me. Like, that wasn't the plan. He wanted to go and just get his feet under him. He knew they were having the day off the next day, and he wanted to just recalibrate. And he's so mature and meticulous in his approach and measured and level. And, like, you know, LaBarbera said to me the other day that he's never seen anybody as talented as this kid ever in his whole career. And he means not just as with Jason as a coach, but also even as a player in the NHL, he's never seen anyone as talented as this kid. And so it's really just about making sure that he continues to, you know, stay even keeled. And, you know, even though, like, in Toronto, there were lots of people, of course, asking questions about him being in the Calder race because it was a chance for him to perform on a big market stage. Then he comes to, you know, the New York area, and same thing. And he's unfazed by it all. Like, you know, that first game in Toronto didn't go his way, but he's unfazed by the enormity of the moment, I guess, is the big thing. And that's probably what sticks out to me the most as we come down the stretch. This is not too much for him.
The Eric Francis Hour, Steinberg and Eric Francis this hour on Flames Talk. Well, I mean, I was going to save it for the second half of the hour, but we might as well jump in on the Dustin Wolf conversation right now, because it's been one of the hottest topics on Flames Talk this week. Vickers and I kicked it around on Wednesday. We had our goalie expert Kevin Woodley weigh in on it. Lots of texts, lots of phone calls about it on the post-game shows. I made the case on Wednesday for why Dustin Wolf should be the Calder Trophy winner. Now, you have a vote. I do not. You are part of the Professional Hockey Writers Association. I am not. So I can only talk about theoretically what my, you know, what my ballot would look like. But I made the case for why, if I had a vote, I would unequivocally have Dustin Wolf on top of my Calder Trophy ballot, because, you know, you take a look at what he's doing as a 23-year-old rookie goaltender when rookie goaltenders aren't supposed to have this type of impact in the NHL this day and age, and his metrics and his numbers and his different rankings and statistical categories have him in the mix with guys who are in the Vezina Trophy conversation this year and guys who are considered the cream of the crop in this league, from Andre Vasilevsky to Connor Hellebuck, who's going to win the Vezina this year, to Logan Thompson and Lucas Dostal, and you know, all these guys who either are the best goalies statistically in the NHL this year, or in the case of Hellebuck and Vasilevsky, are the best, some of the best goalies to play in this era and are still the best goalies in the game. And his numbers are right there with it, like adjusted save percentage and high danger save percentage and goals saved above expected and wins above replacement and all that type of stuff. Like, doesn't matter where you look, Wolf is near the top, top five, top 10, top two in all of these things. And with no disrespect to Celebrini and no disrespect to Hudson, how many of the other rookies in this league you can say the same thing about, that we're talking about them amongst the best at their position? And the answer is none. We're not talking about Celebrini like we're talking about McKinnon and McDavid. We're not talking about Hudson like we're talking about Makar and Haskinen. But we are doing that with Wolf. And for me, like, if it's the best rookie, to me, that's a pretty... that's a pretty bold-faced way to look at how and why Dustin Wolf is the best rookie. Now, that's where I am on it. I'm curious as to, now that we're 68 games into Dustin Wolf's rookie season, where are you on the whole thing?
Well, you know, I guess one way to answer it, and I have spoken to several people in the New York area who are voters, and they're asking my opinion on it, and I say, look, one thing you can't dispute is the fact that he is by far, like, not even in the same category, by far more important to his team than Lane Hudson is to Montreal, or that Macron Celebrini is to San Jose. Now, I think Celebrini is a generational player. I think he's going to be better than Bedard. I think he is an absolute superstar already. And I think he's going to put up numbers that are going to blow some minds over the years. Like, he's already there as the player in any game he plays in that you want to watch the most. But that said, he has dropped off a little bit of late ever since they traded Granlund, and he hasn't had that top line of him, Toffoli, and Granlund, you know, all that talent around him. His numbers have started to kind of slow down a little bit. Meanwhile, Wolf just continues to chug along and keep his team in a playoff race. Like, I'm not sure there's two better arguments than the first one I laid out, which is he's the most important player to his team. Like, he's the reason why this franchise, an organization, a $700 million entity, whatever that it's worth right now, is still in a playoff race because of one player largely. And he's 23 years old. That's an incredible argument for him. I also think that, you know, for him to be standing amongst all those other giants statistically is another easy argument for him. These last 14 games will still go a long way for a lot of people in terms of the vote. I don't think right now, just in polling people around the league, that he's going to win the Calder. I don't. I think people are stuck on Celebrini. But if this kid continues to do this, and if he gets them into the playoffs, I'm not sure how I could look any of my colleagues in the face and ask them why they didn't vote for him or why they wouldn't vote for him if he can pull off this minor miracle. So he's getting my vote, number one vote for sure. Celebrini's number two. At the midway mark, I remember having this conversation with a lot of people, and it was clear to me that I didn't think he was going to get into the top four. You know, a quarter of the way through the season, there's no way he would have gotten it. Sorry, the top three. I didn't think he was going to be named a finalist because Michkov was getting so much attention, but he's not been kind of as good as everyone expected and hoped. So I think he's kind of dropped out of the race. It's a three-horse race. I think that he'll end up finishing second or third. But if he has a big finish here, I definitely think he should finish first. I just don't know if I have trust in my brethren to look at it the same way, because it is apples and oranges, right? And goalies rarely win this award.
When you're polling people, what's the reason why? Like, what when you're talking to people around the league, why aren't they, like, what is holding Wolf back, or what is pushing Celebrini over the top here?
I think just because when they've seen Celebrini play, he just steals the show. He's the fastest player on the ice. He darts in and out. He's making things happen. He's always engaged. He's 3, 4, 5 shots a game. Like, you know, I think they're just stuck on how good he's going to be, how good he already is. And that's kind of the basis of it. Don't forget how many of the voters that I've talked to in the New York area have watched more than 2 or 3 Flames games this year, right?
Yeah.
Very few. Like, we're always going to be dealing with with a bias when it comes to being in a small market, kind of, you know, an outpost in the NHL to some degree. That's not the word I should use, but, you know, we're in the middle of nowhere. We're way out west. We're 2 hours later. People don't stay up late to watch their games. Now, same thing, of course, for Celebrini. Don't get me wrong. I know he's on the West Coast. He's even an hour later for everybody to watch. But when they do see him, they're blown away. And they all the hype they've heard about, they're like, yeah, I get it. I see how special a player is. And then with Hudson, don't forget, he's in such a hockey hotbed. And all the people out east have watched him play more than the other two guys combined. And he is also putting up numbers that are, you know, pretty staggering, where he's, you know, you've seen some of the stats over the years. He got to 50 points faster than Paul Coffey or something like, you know, they're, whatever the stats are, and I can't remember them all right now, but it was basically, you know, his rise to prominence has been very, very quick for a defenseman. Yep. And it's putting him in some pretty good standing as well with some of the greats. So it's going to be an uphill battle. I hate to say it. I don't think he's going to get it, but he's got my vote. And he certainly has my support with anybody who ever asked me about it, because I'm watching borderline miracles with this guy in a race that they just, I just don't think they should be in without him.
Well, we'll find out how that all comes to play as the year goes along. There's still 14 games for the Flames between now and the end of the regular season for Dustin Wolf to help his Calder Trophy bid. But at least you and I are on the same page that if I had a ballot and you do have a ballot, that Dustin Wolf would be number one when it comes to the Calder Trophy. Okay, we are well underway on the Eric Francis Hour. It's Eric Francis at Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca. He's on Twitter at Eric Francis. My name is Pat Steinberg. This hour on Flames Talk, and we're coming at you from our Groundworks downtown studio on this Friday. Your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.
Talking your team right now. Flames Talk is on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
It's a Friday edition of Flames Talk, wherever you get your podcasts, and here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. It's Pat Steinberg along with you, and it's a Friday, so of course it's the Eric Francis Hour. EF with us from Manhattan as the Flames get set to wrap up their four-game road trip against the New York Islanders on Saturday afternoon. So Francis Steinberg along with you this hour on Flames Talk, and lots still to get into, but wanted to kind of reset. We talked a lot about Dustin Wolf in the first half. We talked a lot about that thrilling comeback win over New Jersey on Thursday night. But you wrote on Friday over at Sportsnet.ca about Kevin Ball and just the impact he's made on this team this year. It's a good piece, and a guy that, Eric, like, nobody knew anything about coming into this season. When he was acquired from New Jersey as part of the Jacob Markstrom trade, like, who knew what Kevin Ball was, let alone who knew how important Ball was going to be on this team this year? Take us through your latest at Sportsnet.ca.
Funny, nobody knew who he was, but everybody knew who he wasn't, and he wasn't Dawson Mercer, so everyone was losing their mind. You remember that? Everyone thought that the Calgary Flames would get, you know, a bigger name as part of a deal for Markstrom. But when you think about what that trade, you know, first of all, there's a first-round draft pick coming up this summer because of it. You got rid of Markstrom, who was 34 years of age and only had 1 year left in his contract, and you opened up a spot for Dustin Wolf to come in and flourish and do what he's doing. Like, and on top of it all, you got a defenseman who, you know, the scouts and everything told him that he could be a good player, but at 23, you weren't 100% sure. And he fit in as your number two guy, like on your top pairing, your shutdown guy. Pretty incredible. Understated is the obvious word when it comes to him as a person, him as a player. He quietly goes about his business, but I found a stat that I'll ask you. I mean, we keep getting inundated with so many new stats as time progresses and all the technologies put into place. But I've never seen stick checks before as a stat this year. And I wonder if it started just for guys like Kevin Ball. So as Kevin said, he goes, well, at least I'm leading in something. He's leading the league in stick checks this year. And it's no surprise at 6'6", you know, he's got that big long reach, and he so effectively diffuses plays as the teams come into their zone with that poke check, right? We've all seen it. It's kind of his signature move. And, you know, at 6 foot six in the NHL, you're allowed to apply for an exemption to lengthen your stick another couple inches. So he did that. So he's got the longest stick in the league, basically. And he uses it very effectively. As Rasmus Anderson said, that guy's stick gets everywhere. He says at times he even pokes it off my stick. Like the stick is all over the place. So he's been such a great partner for Anderson. They've got such great camaraderie. He fits in really well in the room. The guys love him for the guy he is, but also the player he is. And when I asked Rasmus, I said, like, tell me something interesting about Kevin Ball, because he is pretty quiet. You don't hear a lot from him. He said, well, I'll tell you, the guy's got two brain cells and they spend the whole day arguing with each other. And he said it loud enough so that, you know, it was a shot at Ball, and Ball heard it and laughed. And anyway, it just speaks to the camaraderie and just how well he's fit in, you know, in every possible way. So where this team would be without Kevin Ball, I shudder to think. I mean,
we saw it for those nine games
that's right.
That he was out, right? They were dreadful without him.
Yeah. And you know, this team had to work very hard and kind of, I don't want to say lucked into, but like what Joel Hanley's been doing as a top four defenseman is kind of blowing a lot of people's minds. Like, this guy was a healthy scratch the first quarter of the season in all but two games. And, you know, now he's emerging as a guy who, in that Rangers game, he was the guy that everyone was talking about more than anybody for that head first dive he made to stop a shot. And, you know, I've seen him with ice bags all over him the last couple of days. The guy is a warrior, and he's, you know, where would the Flames be without him? That's a tough one. Like, when your team depends on defense more than anything else, you know, defending and goaltending, it's amazing to think that this team went into the season with two known commodities, and after that, it was a bunch of question marks. Well, Ball answered those question marks. That was well scouted, and he's turned out really, 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 you know, fantastic for this team, and has rounded out that top four really, really well. So and that's a gift that'll keep giving. A gift that will keep giving, that trade, because of that first round draft pick they get this year. So, you know, I think we could argue now or down the road, is that the best trade Craig Conroy's made in his short time as the GM of the Flames? Well, it's certainly up there. The Lindholm trade was a pretty fruitful one as well, but those two stand out as like massive hauls. And, you know, in both cases, I think at first people weren't really sure how they would turn out.
Well, and in both head-to-head games now, Flames have got the upper hand on Jacob Markstrom, which they've done all they can to make that pick from New Jersey as high as it can possibly be by taking four of a possible four off them in regulation. Both games, the Flames won it off Markstrom in the third period, and I would imagine that feels pretty sweet coming out of New Jersey as well. And then, you know, the interesting or the next interesting part about Ball is what his contract looks like going forward, because he's in the final year of a deal. He's a restricted free agent, and there are two guys right now that if I'm thinking about it, that I am comfortable, like really comfortable going long-term with when it comes to their next deals. And it's Ball and the guy we talked about last in the first half of the hour in Dustin Wolf. And I don't know if Wolf's camp is going to be super interested in going long-term or not, but I do feel like there's a pretty good chance that the Flames and Ball could come to an agreement on a 5-6 year deal here as he comes out of this current deal he's on with the New Jersey Devils. Cause I think you've got a pretty good idea what Ball is like, and not to suggest that he can't be better or anything like that, but I don't think that we're expecting him to turn into an offensive leader on this team. I don't think we're expecting him to be, you know, anything more than he has been in terms of his role, the steady, strong defending type defenseman that can pair really well with a guy like Rasmus Anderson or with a guy like Zane Parekh down the road, or however you want to look at it. If I'm the Flames, I'd be super comfortable going 5 or 6 years on a guy like Ball. And you know, he's the type of player where I think agents would advise, hey, team's got a long-term offer on the table for you. Maybe we should look at this. So I'm really curious what that deal looks like here.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I talked to him about his contract situation. He said, like, you know, again, these guys who wouldn't say this, but he loves Calgary. He definitely plans on being here for a long, long time. And that bodes well that he has that attitude. The coach said, I said, like, is he, he's the kind of defenseman that every coach like loves to have, a guy like that, like a guy who's a dependable stay at home defender, who you can put up against the other team's top line. And he said, no, like he's been much better than we expected. He's been more of a playmaker than he expected. And he thinks there's a whole lot more still there. But he said, like, as a coach, you don't want just one guy like that. Like, I'd take 2, 3, or 4 guys like that. Like, he would be the prototypical guy that every coach would want, as many as he could possibly get, especially because of the size, right? He doesn't crush guys. He's not a big hitter at all. But with that stick and that wingspan and his ability to close guys out, like, it's amazing how many plays are completely broken up by this guy when they come down his side of the ice. It's been and I didn't realize, you know, his first full season in the NHL was the year before in New Jersey. And based on a really successful camp, he was telling me, you know, right out of the chute, they said, you know what, we're going to give you a shot at age 23 to go up against all the best players in the world. We're going to put you on our shutdown pairing and see how you do. And he said he learned so much that year, just in terms of being a pro on the ice, off the ice, maintenance, the tendencies of top lines, things you got to watch out for, learning about every single player in the league who he's got to face.
Yeah.
So he's not a complete package, but he's come a lot better prepared than I think we might have expected with a guy who really only had one full season of NHL under his belt.
Well, and he's the one guy. I mean, you take a look at how this group under Craig Conroy is wanting to get younger and wanting to be a team that can maybe be ready to really hit it and not have to be a surprise playoff team. Like, they want to be ready to contend and ready to be in that spot where, like, yeah, this is a perennial playoff team. They want to be there in you know, 2, 3 years, somewhere in that range, and you start to project what they have in the system and on the roster right now. Kevin Ball's the one guy that you can pencil in on the left side. I mean, with no disrespect to Joel Hanley, who'll be 34 next year. Don't even know if he'll be back next year. With no disrespect to Jake Bean, the one core guy or the one long-term guy that you can talk about on the left side of this defense right now is Ball. I mean, you've got Uyghur, maybe Anderson, Zane Parekh, and, you know, whether you look at Brestevich and Muse as possibilities as well, their right side on defense is stacked, but they're pretty thin organizationally for the future on that left side. So having Ball in the fold going forward is as a top four guy on the left side seems pretty important. And I don't know, the option to play him with Zane Parekh long-term, I don't know what's going to happen with Rasmus Anderson long-term, and I think that's taken a really interesting turn over the last few months just with the way Raz's game has maybe dropped a little bit. But I do think that we all expect Zane Parekh to be a long-term member of this team, and a steady guy like Kevin Ball and Zane Parekh on the right side of him. I mean, I don't know if that's the way it's going to go, but you can't tell me that as a Flames fan, that's not an exciting potential prospect, right?
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, I use the word cornerstone of the Calgary Flames defense moving forward, and I was kind of debating, is that a little too strong a term? You know, when you think of cornerstones, like Mackenzie Uyghur, to me, is the number one cornerstone on this blue line moving forward by virtue of the long-term contract he has and by virtue of the fact that I think he's by far the most well-rounded player on the team. I actually think he's the most versatile, well-rounded guy they have. So he's the cornerstone. I think Ball is not the same player. He's not as well-rounded, but in that he's already on the top pairing at age 24, like, that is a cornerstone type player. Defensemen usually take a lot longer to mature and really flourish than he has. And I think he's going to get better and better. So yeah, I do see him as a cornerstone. Like, I think it's going to be pricey for him to sign him, especially if it's long-term, because he leads in the most important stat in the league, which is stick checks. At least that's what the agent.
You had me for a second. Yeah.
That's what the agent's going to say. I laughed and I said, like, this stat sounds like something an agent came up with who had a guy, you know, like Luke Shen or something, who'd only been able to poke check his whole life. And funny, I was thinking that because that's exactly what Ryan Huska said too. Like he said, that sounds like something an agent would make up. And sure enough, but it is legit. I got our stats guys to look at it, and he's right up there with all the best in the league.
You sucked me right in on that one as well. Yeah, and it's a real testament to him, and again some decent pro scouting from the Flames to identify Ball, because when they acquired him, Craig Conroy said they had identified him for the last year plus prior to acquiring him. So it's been a really nice fit and a really important part of Calgary's success so far through 68 games. Okay, their next game 69, is that game against the New York Islanders to wrap up this road trip. An opportunity to get 6 of a possible 8 points on this trip, which, you know, going into it, that's kind of what a lot of people said. Hey, this could be a really successful trip if you could take 3 of 4. Now, I don't know how many people were confident that was going to happen after the Toronto loss, but here they are. Big win, complete win over the Rangers, crazy comeback win over the Devils, and now they've got themselves in a spot where they absolutely can take 3 of a possible 4 games on this trip. I'm curious who they go to in net, and if they decide to go back to Dan Vladar for the finale, because I mean, there's a possibility they might do that. I'm really curious to see, but you know, by and large, I mean, this is they've got the opportunity here, Eric, to wrap up this trip and make it a really successful one.
That's right, and they get a bit of a break today. We found out that the Islanders are going to start Hogberg. I'm not even sure how to say it. He's had so few starts in the National Hockey League. They really want to, you know, have Sorokin, who's, you know, one of the biggest workhorses in the league. They want to rest him tomorrow because they've got a big slate of games coming up next week. So that is a bit of a break. Now, Hogberg's numbers are incredible, small sample size, but they're almost as impressive as Sorokin. So maybe it's not a break, but, you know, they're going to face him tomorrow. And, you know, this is a chance for them to put a nice bowl on a trip that didn't start well but could end spectacularly. And I keep joking. I don't know what you can help me. You're a wordsmith. Like, Coronado has scored in both of the New York stops, the New York area stops on this trip, and it's his first time ever through here. He's a native of Long Island, so tomorrow is actually his first return home in his NHL career, and that's always exciting for him. And I know his mom was at Madison Square the other night when he scored the winner, and, you know, exciting times for this guy. What do you call it if a guy gets a goal in all three New York area cities? I was like, is that a big Apple hat trick, or is that a New York state of mind hat trick? I don't know. I need a sexy word before tomorrow.
How about the New York trifecta?
Oh, that's pretty good, buddy. Yeah. Ooh. I like that. I might use that one.
You know what? And you don't even have to, I won't even trademark that. That's all yours.
Okay. Appreciate it. I'll buy you a rum. Curious to see how he plays. I think he's been fantastic the last couple of games. I think actually of late he's been great, and not just as a guy with a deadly shot who's been using it effectively, but as a guy who, like, his legs are out there churning as much as anybody's.
Oh, yeah.
And defensively he's made such an impact. And, you know, there was another interesting development. We didn't talk about it last week, but Morgan Frost, after that game last week, I asked him, because they put him in basically Backlund's spot. And I said, like, have you ever been used as a shutdown center before? And he said, never in my life. As a matter of fact, I kind of want to come here and prove that I shouldn't be hidden for the final few minutes of a game. Like, not only did he never play that role, they went out of their way in Philadelphia, Tortorella, to make sure that he was never on the ice in the final few minutes. Yet, in Madison Square Garden with 2.5 minutes to go, there he was on the ice, with Coronado and Huberdeau. I think they had almost a 2-minute shift, and they were out there. Frost blocked a shot. And,
yeah,
you know, so everybody's doing things that are kind of outside their comfort zone. And for Coronado, like, even a year ago, remember when he was getting back and forth between the minors, the big two things they kept saying is, we need your compete level to be a little higher, like along the boards. You got to win more board battles. And B, we need to depend on you defensively. Well, I think those are two of his fortes right now. So he's grown leaps and bounds too. So I'm kind of happy for him tomorrow that he's going to have so many friends and family members in attendance for his return to Long Island. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Okay, before we go, New York trifecta or tri-state trifecta?
Tri-state trifecta.
Boom.
I love it.
Get out of here. We'll see you when you're back. Enjoy your last couple days in the tri-state area, and we'll see you back in Calgary for next week. Thanks, pal.
Have a great weekend. Thanks, bud.
There he is. That's Eric Francis, and that'll do it for the Eric Francis Hour on this Friday. It's Steinberg along with you as we start to wrap things up on this hour of Flames Talk. Get us wherever you get your podcasts, as you know, Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, and more. Thanks to Cam Hughes and Taylor Dingman, our outstanding producers this hour, and this hour has been the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Did you know that barrier-free access doors are required for commercial entrances and public washrooms? Are you compliant? Visit CalgaryLockAndSafe.com.